Good morning, friends. This gospel reading for New Year's Day is taken from the Sermon on the Mount and consists of basically three ideas. Firstly, as you are the light of the world, be that light openly, that is, allow your good works to be seen and known so that men might glorify the Father. But secondly, as you are not hypocrites, do your good works in secret. That is, do them for the Father, who is both a secret and sees you in secret, not to be rewarded or acknowledged by other people, but laying up your rewards, quote, in heaven, unquote. I suppose this ties in with take up your cross for my sake and the Son of Man and his angels rewarding each man according to his works, which is my nod to Revelation. And as we're in the octave of our patron saint, St. John the Divine. Thirdly, and most cryptically of all, the eye is the light of the body. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be filled with light. Be ye therefore perfect, even as thy Father in heaven is perfect. So, a bit of a puzzle, and doing good works in order that men may glorify the Father may be of particular relevance to our little church in light of Neil's talk, where he asked us to consider what gift we could give the community out there. What gift indeed? Is a kind of answer to be found in this gospel when it begins, you are the light of the world? Are you? Are we? What is being the light of the world? Sounds pretty special, doesn't it? And what does it mean to have that light be seen in your good works so that men may glorify the Father? Does it mean do good things so that people think, oh God, you are so glorious, and start chanting glory, glory, glory over and over and over? Forgive me, but I think not. What does it mean, glorify the Father? What is glory? It's one of those archaic words, right? And because it's a good idea to deepen our knowledge, I am going to go into it a bit. And the Greek is kind of fun. Glorify is doxasosin, from the verb doxazo. To think or to imagine, from the root doxa, opinion, which also means glory. Sometimes it is translated as praise, and sometimes as glorify. It means both. In the Greek, that distinction is missing, which seems odd since one is visual and the other is auditory. And wouldn't you know it, this is where things start to get a bit esoteric. One imagines in the world of imagination, which in some strange way is made of light. One's thinking somehow always has a kind of glow, secretly, I mean. And glow is our common word derived from the archaic word glory. Yet one praises with sound. But sound in the inner world always manifests in light. Now, while for the ancients this nexus of meaning was deliberate and well-formed, modern people, with our cultural explosion after the European Renaissance and Enlightenment periods, have a plethora of increasingly conflicting ideas arising from the ambiguity. So, while we may be aware of the esoteric relationship between sound and light, or at least several people in this church have written about it, we find that only by breaking the original light-sound nexus momentarily can we get some perspective. So, removing the idea of praise for just a moment, we see that glory means shining, and that to glorify something means to shine on something. So we can be reasonably assured glory is shining, and that to glorify something means to shine on something, to light it up. Not, in this case, adulation, fame, or goodness, but a property of light. And if that is the case, when one glorifies the Father, one is really beginning to shine back on the Father, as the Father is already shining on us. The Father shines in order that men may shine back, and the apostles' job is to make it so that men shine back on the Father. Pretty simple, right? But what a monumental job. Monumental. And we still don't know what the light is they keep talking about. You don't see any light shining from me, do you? no matter how many good works I do. Then again, perhaps I don't do any. But, well, we could take Mother Teresa. Everyone agreed that she did a lot of good, but we never saw any light shining. So what is the light? Is it just a metaphor? A good question. So let's just keep it in mind. By contrast, the second idea is self-explanatory. Do alms in secret. The Father sees all in secret. Indeed, the Father shines in secret and is a secret Father. Kind of obvious. You see no Father of human shining anywhere, do you? Some bright spark may say, oh, they just mean the sun. That's the sun in the sky, I mean, S-U-N, sun. The temptation is there to say it. I've felt that temptation myself. Actually, I did say it just then. But the Son is not the Father. You don't go to the trouble of describing something unknown in the same terms as something known. The Son, in the sky, call it by its own special name, the Father, but really just mean the known thing. The Father, who is the One, is much, much more than the Son in the sky, at least for the people who wrote these verses. And the One is our secret Father, a hidden one, doing his own work in secret. Nobody sees him doing it unless they learn how to penetrate the secret. Now, the word secret is another one of these multi-layered words. In English, it has a common root with sacred, just as the Irish word for secret, rune, also means lover. But the original Greek word from the text is kryphaio, from kryphaios, obtained from crypto. And kryphaios, it more properly means cloaked or hidden, or in Latin, occult. So the Father, often also just rendered O, the One, is the hidden or occult Father, the occult One, the hidden One. And in the Apocryphon of John, a key inner text of the early church, as in many of the secret texts, the Father is always referred to as the One, or the Hidden One, and not God being above or beyond any God. Shades of the Tao here. By implication, a person must strive to be more like the One, and indeed go into the land of the hidden as one's purpose and meaning arise there. We are also told, shine your light, but do it secretly so no one knows who is shining. Do good works, but take care only to attract such attention to them that brings praise to the One, and not attention to yourself, lest by adding yourself you bring corruption. And in our little church, this means something about whatever gift we share with those out there. But that puzzle, we must all turn individually. And then there's that mystery, that mysterious little sentence. The eye is the light of the body, and having thine eye be single makes the whole body filled with light. Consider then the archetype. I mean, think of some single-eyed characters. What about these two? Udin Allfather, who gave one eye to drink from the sacred well of memory, Minnesbrunner, and Haruur, Egyptian Horus Falcon, who lost an eye contending with Set. If this passage from the Sermon on the Mount invokes the same archetype, then we are each in a sacrificial struggle where the giving up of, quote, an eye, unquote, may adduce gifts of wisdom, regeneration, or both. While other, some exceedingly esoteric, interpretations lie awaiting, we should remember the eye being single may just mean a unified view. And if, quote, the whole body, quote, unquote, is a church, we are being asked to come to a unified view, a correct view as a community. We are being asked to come to a single correct view so that we may all partake in the light. So what might be a correct unified view? And here's the rub. How could we even know it if we don't already have it? Perhaps the question then ought to be rather, how might we bring about a correct view? Our text extols us to be more like the Father, so more like the Good One, the Hidden One. And so striving, go into the land of the hidden, as one's purpose and meaning arise there, yet not through intellect or dogma, cosmology or theology. Anyone, friends, who has attempted to use their intellect in that way may tell you that approach produces systems of supremely complex sophistication, but alas, not a unified view. The secret of the Hidden One is not penetrated by intellect, which can only approach the boundary of its mystery. And despite what I am about to say, imagination has the same problem. The intellect, as tool of the ego, tends to puff up, declaring it is proven so many angels tread here or there and argue this or that imaginary friend is the real imaginary friend. Beware of the intellect. A simple approach, on the other hand, should return to the undefiled, the unsullied, the simple light that's been there all along. So, for example, a unified view can be approached by the observation of that inner light that is the gift the Father gave to us all. You know, it's what the inside of the head looks like to each of us, not the brain and blood, the interior viewed from the inside, which when your eyes are open is just what you see around you, people, pews, cushions, chairs, candles, plants, stones, lectern, me, so on. Indeed, the whole newness of life, as Paul has it. And when your eyelids close, the inner light illuminates your head. Even if you can't see it, it's there because you were there. And it is you. The real you, I mean. And as a person goes into it, glory, glory, glory. It manifests in sound. Now, so long as this person guards against the danger of imagination, the mind's want for illusion, then something else will also happen. Eventually, the sound grows and grows, as by itself, in waves of light unfolding, ever more intricate lacings of fluid ether. Eventually, the sound fills a person's whole being, and it may become very intense. It's a particular sound, which is light, which is life, but also so close to the taint called death, touching its edge. And then it is quite obvious what it means to let one's eye be single, with no intellectual explanation ever being required. And this is the beginning of knowing what it is to have one's whole body filled with light, the beginning. It is, I suggest, the beginning of a knowledge of one gift, of the invisible one. And then a person may begin to hear and know the sound that is the light from the one. And then blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might all make a great deal of sense. And upon the return from knowledge of the secret light, a sense of space and feeling of well-being create the extra time, sometimes called detachment, though it is not what most people mean by detachment. And this gap in time brings about right action, good decisions, and respectful silence, kindness in interactions with others, fairness, justice, love. So that, thinking of Neil's talk, I don't know about you, but were I to give someone a gift, it would be, I suppose, eventually, the gift of knowledge of that secret light, which is the sound that is life and a beginning of fellowship with the One.